सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ A statement was made by Bhagwan in verse 5 saying that Antakale, the question that is now being answered is the last question of Arjun. So the last question was, how does a person who has controlled his mind throughout his life remember you at the time of death? Prayanakale, how does he remember you? So Bhagwan says that the one who, Antakale and Prayanakale is the same at the time of death, the one who remembers me will come straight to me. We have seen that you cannot remember something that you don't know. And therefore there is a hidden message in there saying that you have to know him first. If you have to remember something, first thing is you have to have the knowledge. Second thing is that you have to practice that remembering in your young age, because in your old age, everything becomes difficult. Even the easy things become difficult. So if you are practicing taking the name throughout your life, it will become so easy that it won't be that, there won't be a requirement of that much effort in the old age to remember. So that is also underlying in there. And the knowledge has to be correct. That also is there, because if the knowledge is not correct, then whatever memory will come will not be correct, and then this statement cannot hold good. So a statement has been made, and Bhagwan says, do not have doubt in this. That means we must have faith in Bhagwan's words. Question arises, on what basis are you saying this? So Bhagwan gives the principle in verse 6, saying that it's not me. Whoever anybody remembers will go to that. That is the principle, that the last thought of our mind at the time of departure will determine our future birth. I told you the story of Jada Bharata, whose last thought was, who is going to take look after this deer? He was born as a deer. And the last thought will be actually determined by the thoughts that we have entertained throughout our life. If we have thought of our business only, or our shop only, or our family only, or our children only, grandchildren only throughout life, then that is the thought which will be topmost at the end, when things will have become already difficult for us in the old age. So therefore, it is very essential that we practice remembering the Lord throughout our life. When we are able to put forth effort, when we are young, we are able to put forth effort, having faith. If we do that, then at the end, we will remember him, and then we will go attain his being. And therefore, Bhagwan says, Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu. All the time means spirituality is not a part-time job. It is a full-time engagement. And not that we have to do his japa all day long, but I've told you, wherever your hands are, if your mind is in the present moment, that is also remembering the Lord. In those who are the devotees of the highest kind, like Tukaram and Tulsidasji and Hanumanji, they never even bothered about anything outside, but they had that sort of faith and devotion where they kept on remembering the Lord all the time. We cannot do that. So let us, practice whatever we can. So at least in the morning, few minutes, at night before going to bed, remember the Lord. Remember the Lord when we are starting any project, opening our computer, and then try and be in the present moment all the time. Because in the present moment is the Lord, is the presence. The presence is in the present. So if you keep your mind in the present, then you're keeping it in the presence. So we can do that. And then, abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa na anya gamina. So by practice, because the mind is very, very, it is like a truant child. It is like a monkey. It will keep on jumping here and there. It will keep on going here and there. So the way to control it is by practice. Any practice makes perfect. any kind of perfection that you want to achieve in any field, you have to practice it over and over again. Same way Bhagwan is saying here, by abhyasa, by practice. So for a long time, you have to keep doing the same thing and nirantarya without a break. Then what will happen is that mind will be under your control and it will not run helter-skelter here and there. And then you think of the Paramam Purusham. So keep the mind in the Supreme Reality. Anu Chintayan. Anu again word is used. So after. So that means first know about the reality, and knowing about the reality has to be from the scriptures. That is the only authentic, not Google. Scriptures are the only authentic means of knowledge. And who can tell us is the Guru. So first know what this Paramam Purusham Divyam is, and then by abhyasa, by practice, keep your mind on that Purusham. Now in verse 9, he gives us a whole description of himself. And again, this verse also is very important. And this is another verse, which is only one verse if we can contemplate on, it's possible to realize. Self-liberation is possible just with this one verse. Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Anoraniyan Samanusmaredya Sarvasya Dhataram Achintya Rupam Aditya Varnam Tamasav Parastat. Whosoever meditates upon the omniscient, the ancient, the ruler of the whole world, the minuter than an atom, the supporter of all, of form inconceivable, effulgent like the sun and beyond the darkness or ignorance. So whoever contemplates, so that's why Bhagwan is saying that know me like this and contemplate on these words. Kavim, Kranta Darshinam, Kavim. Kavi here, Kavim or Kavi here should not be taken as a poet. It doesn't mean that it's a poet. Kranta Darshinam means Sarvadnya, means all knowing. Of course, in Hindi, there is a saying, Kavi Jaye Jaha Ravi Na Jaye. Ravi is the sun. So, means what? In the poet's mind, he has got a vivid imagination. Na? That's why they write poetry, right? It's a vivid imagination. So, where even the sun cannot go, the poet will go. But here, what it means, Kavim here, Kranta Darshanam means Sarvadnya. What is the meaning of Sarvadnya? All knowing. What does it mean to us? If we truly have faith in the fact that God is all-knowing, then we must have the faith that He is watching us 24/7. He's watching our thoughts, He's watching our actions, He's watching our speech, right? So if we have that thing in mind that God is watching us 24/7, would we do anything wrong? See, we cannot, no? Like, nobody's watching, you know, let me just do this. The cat drinks milk with closed eyes. She thinks nobody's watching her. It's not like that. So that's what this word Sarvadnya, we must see. If we think that there is this Brahman who is all knowing over there, that is not the correct idea. One thing you can understand it is this Sarvadnya means I am Sarvadnya. I as the Supreme Consciousness am all knowing. Or the other way to get this is that if God is all-knowing, then He is watching me all the time. Okay? So this is the meaning that should come in our mind. Puranam. Puranam means ancient. Gurudev has translated it as ancient. So Pura Avanava. Pura Avanava Iti Puranam. Means what? Pura means old. Old or ancient, yet new. Avanava means yet new. So the best way to understand this is, if we take this particular moment, this particular second, you know, this unit of time that I have, how long have I had this unit of time? I've had it since I was born. Right? I've had it since I was born. The unit of time, this moment, I had it yesterday, I had it last week, last month, last year, ever since I was born. So it is in that sense, it is very ancient. And yet at this moment, it's a new moment for me to do whatever that I want to do. So ancient, it's been there since beginning of time or even beyond time, because this is referring now to the supreme reality. And yet it is new, means it has not undergone any modification at all. It's like brand new. See, we have clothes and house and things. It's old, and the older it gets, the older it looks also. It fades, clothes fade, or the instrument doesn't work as well, etc., etc., right? So there is some sort of modification in that thing. But here, Purana means even though the supreme reality is beyond time, so it's the most ancient thing. And yet it is the present moment, which is always new. So there is not any modification, any change in the supreme reality, Purana. Anushasitaram means controller. Anushasan is discipline. So Anushasitaram means one who maintains discipline, means one who controls. So here this word refers to Ishvara. So the supreme reality has been brought down a notch, because the supreme reality is the non-doer. The absolute pure consciousness, the substratum of pure consciousness, is a non-doer. It is not a controller or anything. But as Ishvara, and therefore Ishvara, another name for Ishvara is Antaryami. So how does he control us? He is the indweller within us. And as the indweller, he controls us. How exactly does that happen? Through our conscience. Our conscience will always tell us if we are doing something wrong. We don't listen to it is a different matter. But we do have that little inner voice telling us, don't do that, don't do that. And yet we go ahead and do it, right? So he becomes the inner controller because he is within us, all of us, all the jivas. So Anushasitaram. Anuraniyan means subtler than the subtlest. So smaller than even an atom. You know, we say atom is the smallest thing, but very, very subtle. So what, see, this gross world or the body is gross. Then the mind is subtler than the body. The vasanas are even more subtler. Then the, you know, total mind, Hiranyagarbha, is more subtle. Ishvara, more subtle. And then the final is pure consciousness. So therefore, it is very, very subtle. And this is how this is to be understood. Okay, Anuraniyan, extremely subtle. Anu smaredhya, again the word anu has come. Smaredhya means remember, smarana, it is coming from smarana. So should be remembered after what? After knowing the correct meanings of these words should be remembered and contemplated upon. What does it mean when it is said that the supreme reality is sarvajna, and how it should translate into our life? So because it is said that we have to meditate 24/7, it's a 24/7 process, so obviously it's not an action. So how would that meditation happen? If I know that this sarvajna Ishvara is watching me, then I will not do anything wrong in life. So already I have acknowledged his presence within me, and I'm not doing anything wrong. Okay, every moment is a new moment, means what? All the past should be dropped right away. Now I have a new moment to do whatever that I want to do. Don't keep harping on the past. That's what we do. We keep worrying about the past. We keep worrying about the future. So don't let the mind run in the past or the future. Inner controller, listen to the voice of the conscience. Let him control us. Let that voice control us. Let that voice tell us what we are doing wrong, what we should not be doing. And then learning to... Most of the people, you know, until the mind is really purified, that voice can't even be heard. As the mind gets purified slowly, slowly through karma yoga, etc., then you start hearing this voice inside you. Very, very subtle. So can never be known through the senses. Subtle is that which cannot be known through the senses. So stop looking for him in the outside world. That's what we are doing. We are looking for happiness in the outside world. And happiness is the Lord. So stop looking outside. So don't let the senses go extroverted. Try to make them introverted. Then sarvasya dhataram, sarvasya. So dhataram, it is the support of the entire universe, right? Is there a change? Ah, Chintarupa is coming in afterwards, okay. Yeah. So sarvasya dhataram, it is the, why, how is it the support? Because it is in the form of existence. When we look at the world, we say the everything is, the tree is, the room is, the computer is. So that isness is the support which is there. So it doesn't matter how many solar systems there are, or we say there are 1,000 solar systems. There are so many Milky Ways or black holes or whatever there is, stars, planets, etc. Everything is being supported by that are or is. And that is the sarvasya dhataram that is being talked about. So he is the support, the supreme support of everything in this universe. And he himself does not need any support. Normally, you know, I'm sitting on the chair, but the chair is supported by the floor, and the floor is supported by the building, and the building is supported by the earth, right? So, and who is supporting the earth? Is him, is the Supreme Lord. It's being kept in orbit, and therefore it is there. So, but the Lord himself does not require any support from anybody. Achintya Rupam, Rupam, form. So it is a form which cannot be thought of. That means what? Means it does not have a form at all. It's formless. And the reason that it has to be formless is only when it is formless can it support all the forms. Like the screen, a movie screen, it is, no matter which screen it is always white. Why? Because only white can support all the colors. If it was a red screen, it would not support the red color. If it was a green screen, it will not support green. So if all the colors have to be supported, the screen itself has to be colorless. Same way, if all the forms have to be supported, the supporting entity has to be formless. And that is what is meant by achintya rupam. That's why we cannot say it's rectangular, it is round, it is this, that, hexagonal, nothing like that. So therefore you can't think achintya, cannot think of the form. It is formless. Aditya Varnam means resplendent as the sun, so bright as the sun. But that is not, means it should not be understood like, okay, as actually in the Virat, this thing in chapter 11, then Sanjay at the end, he says, the brilliance is like 1,000 suns, 1,000 suns. So that is not what is meant, that we shouldn't take it as comparing to the sun. What it is, as we know, sun is the brightest entity here, but the light of the sun doesn't support darkness. Means what? Means wherever there is sunlight, darkness cannot exist. Sunlight and darkness cannot coexist. Either there has to be dark, which means there is no sun, or if there is sun, there is dark. And then, okay, the sun is illumining the whole world, but who is giving validity to the sun is a conscious being, is me. So my eyes, who are looking at the sun and saying, okay, the sun is shining, are actually more bright than the sun. Like, you know, in the bulb, we have 40 watt bulb, we have 60 watt bulb, then we have 100 watt bulb, right? So there's a gradation, there's a hierarchy. So the 100 watt is brighter than the 60 watt, and the 61 is... But the sun is brighter than this. So if you keep that 100 watt bulb, which is very bright in a dark room, but if you keep it out in the sun, then what is going to happen? Nothing. The 100 watt bulb is not going to have any effect at all. So the sun is very bright and it is illumining, but it has no validity. There's no conscious being saying that there is a sun. So the eyes are more powerful than the sun. And who is giving that power to the eyes is the Supreme Reality. So the Supreme Reality is more powerful or more resplendent, more shining than the sun itself. And the Supreme Reality is one which supports light and darkness. So it is beyond both light and darkness. when I enter a pitch dark room where I cannot see anything at all, it's really pitch dark. I may not be aware of anything in the room, but I am aware of myself being in the room. So the Supreme Consciousness, that awareness within me, is actually illumining the darkness outside, because I know that I'm standing in a dark room. So the darkness is being illumined and the light within is being illumined because of the fact that I know that I am there. Whether anything else is there in the room, I don't know, but I know for sure that I am there. So the awareness inside is light inside. Light, when we talk of awareness, we should not think like this ordinary bulb light. Is that awareness? Am I not aware that I'm standing or sitting in a dark room? And so that light is there within, as well as at the same time, the darkness outside is being illumined. And that's why sun cannot illumine dark. Where the sun will enter, the darkness has to disappear. So the sun, there it becomes limited. Sun cannot illumine darkness, whereas Supreme Reality illumines darkness. So Supreme Reality, the light of Supreme Reality, is beyond light and dark. And that is why this Aditya Varnam must not be understood as it is as bright as the sun. No, it is not as bright as the sun. It is actually brighter than the sun, and it is greater than the sun, because the sun cannot illuminate darkness, but the Supreme Reality can. Okay. Tamasa Parastat. So beyond the darkness or ignorance. Tamas is darkness or ignorance. Parastat is beyond darkness. So So beyond darkness beyond darkness is one meaning, is it is supporting all the pairs of opposites. So good and bad, both are being supported by the Supreme Reality, but because it is supporting the good and the bad, it doesn't become good because of the good, and it doesn't become bad because of the bad. So when we take the case of Arjuna and Duryodhan, Supreme Reality was supporting both of them. But the Upadhi was good and the Upadhi was bad. The mind of Arjuna or mind of Duryodhan. But because the Upadhi is, or if we take ordinary example of our, you know, light and electricity, which Gurudev has given very often, you can plug in a 40 watt bulb and you can plug in a 100 watt bulb. But that doesn't mean that the electricity is becoming 100 watts and the electricity is becoming 40 watts. Electricity is not being affected, but the type of bulb that you plug in will determine how much light. So the mind, if it is more tamasic, more rajasic, then that's what the manifestation is, Duryodhan. But because the manifestation is rajas, the Supreme Reality is not becoming rajas. That is what is meant by tamasa parasat. It is beyond this ignorance. It is beyond knowledge also. So we cannot say that an intelligent person in Supreme Reality has become intelligent. A dull person, Supreme Reality has now become dull. No. Supreme Reality, while supporting both intelligence in the intellect and dullness in the intellect, itself does not become intelligent or dull in any way. All right? That's what it's meant. So this verse, this shloka, is very important. Again, it's a meditation verse. That's why Bhagwan has said that contemplate on it, anusmaredya. So understand the meanings properly, and those meanings have to be contemplated upon and brought into our life as much as we can. Now he's, because the question is going off what happens at the time of departure. So now what he says is, now see, the one who meditates like that throughout his life on that, okay? So the following verses, they pertain to that sort of a person, not somebody who has, you know, like been in the worldly things. So that's why this thing comes now. And this is the way that the yogis actually, they leave their bodies, those who take samadhi, etc. Prayana kale manasa chalena bhaktya yukta योग बलेन चैव ध्रुवोर्मध्ये प्राणमावेश्य सम्यक सतम परम पुरुषमुपैति दिव्यम्. At the time of death, with an unshaken mind full of devotion, by the power of yoga, fixing the whole prana breath in the middle of the two eyebrows, he reaches that supreme resplendent Purusha. So when he says he reaches, who is this he? The one who has done verse 9 throughout his life. Done verse means not just by hearted it and chanted it, but thought, contemplated, meditated upon those words as they actually mean. So now that sort of a person will have a very steady mind, because what he's saying is manasa achalena. He has prayana kale, same antakale, prayana kale, at the time of departure, okay, with a mind which is very steady. If your mind has been unsteady throughout the life, do you think suddenly you can make it steady at the time of death? There's no way. There's no way. So when it is said that at the end he has made his mind steady, that means it is to be understood that throughout his life he has practiced making the mind steady. Abhyasa yoga yukta balena. Abhyasa he has done. Practice he has done. And what practice he has done? Kavim Puranam Anusha. So like that he has kept on thinking. So his mind is constantly going towards the supreme reality. Only such a person at the end of life can do this. And devotion with bhaktya, with full so devotion, a huge amount is faith, of faith is in there. So, you know, it's not like, okay, Bhagwan said, but really does he mean it and all. There is absolutely no contrary thought. There's no doubt. That's the only way the mind can remain steady. Why our mind doesn't remain steady? Because some doubt pokes in, you know, and then the mind wavers. So there is no such doubt. Yukto yoga bale, yoga balena strength. So by the strength of yoga, and what is yoga? Yoga is that practice of samadhi. And what is samadhi? Keeping the mind, samadhi, dhi is intellect, sama equal. So keeping the mind at one spot, that is what samadhi means. And only when the mind is able to stay at one spot will it remain steady. Otherwise, that is what's happening to us, right? Our mind is running here, then it's running there, and it's running at 100 different places. So yukto, having made it, yukta, he has joined by the practice of yoga. He has practiced steadfastness. He has practiced, controlled his mind so much that the mind is now very, very steady. And dhruvormadhye, this is, you know, chakras are not mentioned, but that is what they do. They move the pranas through the chakras, and this is one chakra here. So this is where prana aveshya. So this, the pranas are held here. See, you must understand that this is for a yogi of a very, very high stature. This is not for ordinary people. This is not, Bhagwan is not talking about ordinary people. Because the question, remember, it was, how does a person leave his body? The one who is controlled, niyatatma bhi. So that word, that qualifying word is there. Arjun has asked how, so if a person, like, you know, Sant Naneshwar, who took samadhi, or there are other saints I have read, South Indian saints also, they took samadhi. This is how they leave their body. So what they do is, because they have practiced the steadfastness of mind throughout their life, so when they decide to take samadhi, when they decide to, Sant Naneshwar, I know, in Alandi, you know, he said, now I'm going to go underground and you can build. And then he sat in that lotus position. This is what he did. So all the pranas through the chakras, they move here, and then they let go from here. They can control the pranas, and they, at the time that they want to leave the body, they leave the body. We don't have a choice, because we don't have that sort of tapas behind us. So prana avesha samyaka sam sat saha he tam param purusham upaiti divyam. And this is how he lets go, and he becomes one with the supreme reality. Means what? Means after death, if you have to become one with this, you already have to have realized before death. You cannot suddenly realize at the time of death all your life if you have not done all this practice, and if you have not got that tatva jnana, that knowledge of the self, aprokshanyana, not paroksha. Parokshanyana we also have. This aprokshanyana, which is your own self, if you don't have that, at the time of death, you can never get it. So that's why he says that with the mind extremely steady. So all these means the mind was steady before, throughout his life. Devotion. Suddenly you can't get devotion for the Lord. He would have practiced devotion, faith, everything throughout his life. And on that strength of yoga. So strength comes from where? Practice. How suddenly strength will come? Strength cannot come suddenly like that. Especially in the old age, how that will come? No. So all his life yoga. And then holding his prana, bringing the pranas here. See, they say that the pranas, they leave from different apertures in the body at the time of death. And if they leave from the lower apertures, then the person gets an animal body. And if it goes from the middle, say the heart chakra or whatever, then it's a human body. So you remain same, you don't devolve. But if the pranas, for realized masters, it goes out of the Brahmarandhra, all realized masters. So if the pranas go out from here, they will directly merge with the supreme reality. So that is liberation. So even if we can, anything above the heart chakra up to here, if the pranas get released, then at least we will be same human birth we will get. But anything lower, it will be a lower body. But this person is a person who has done a lot of meditation, has knowledge, has remembered, has devotion, and he, with the practice of yoga, he can control his pranas. We can't even control our whatever prana, what control will do to the mind also, we can't control body also, we can't. So this is not, so it's this thing. The next verse is lifted from Kathopanishad. In Kathopanishad, Kathopanishad is one Upanishad which is chanted at the time of funeral. That is one that is there. And the reason that it is chanted is because in the Upanishad itself, Bhagwan Lord Yama has said that when this is chanted, then the person will go to the Supreme. It is said like that. But the point even there when we teach, we say that you're dead already, the person. Now somebody else is chanting, how you will gain the Supreme Reality? So the actual meaning is that it's not just the chanting. If that person has studied Kathopanishad and followed all of it throughout his life, then he can. But the karmakandis, those who are very much into karmas, who think that karma is the be all and end all of life, they actually are very particular and they will chant this because they do believe that, no, Bhagwan said that if this is chanted, then this person will go. It doesn't work like that. As per Vedanta, it doesn't work. Somebody else is chanting how you will get. And at the when once you're already dead, then what is, you know. So, but this is the verse. So this is the verse that the karmakandis chant at the time of funeral, at the time of death. Yada yadaksharam veda vido vadanti vishanti yatyatayo vitaragaha yadichanto brahmacharyam charanti. I can't get the tune. Tatte padam sangrahena pravakshe. Anyway, that which is declared imperishable by the Veda knowers, that which the self-controlled and desire freed enter, that desiring which brahmacharya is practiced, that goal I will declare to thee in brief. So I told you this is from Kathopanishad. So yad aksharam veda vido vadanti. Vadanti say. Who says? Vedas say. Okay. Yad aksharam. So that aksharam. So that imperishable goal about which the Vedas talk about, and vishanti yat yatayo vitaragaha. So the yataha it means the one who strives. So the one who strives to reach that goal, which goal? Which the Vedas are talking about. How is that goal? Aksharam, imperishable. And vitara, without attachment. So this is those who are thinking about that goal, aksharam, Yadichanto Brahmacharyam Charanti. So they have moved about in this world. Brahmacharyam here means control of all the senses. It is not celibacy alone. Brahmacharya means where all the with all the senses controlled, they have without any attachment to the world. Vitaraga attachment to what? With a detached attitude, they have thought about this aksharam. They have, which the Vedas talk about that padam, that goal, that supreme goal. I will now tell you in detail. This is what Bhagwan, now this is again another statement that he's making. In Kathopanishad as well as in Prashnopanishad, they give Om Upasana. This is Bhagwan Shankaracharya has written, what is the connection suddenly by Kathopanishad verse is brought here. One reason is in Kathopanishad itself, it is said that this Kathopanishad should be chanted when the person dies and then the person will go to the supreme reality. But that is not the, we do, in Vedanta we don't. But the Karma Kandans have taken that and so they go on chanting that. What Bhagwan is saying here is, that's why it is the one who has already practiced this. Prashnopanishad also, the question is asked, what happens to the one who does Om Upasana? And there a teacher says that this Om, when the person has thought about the entire gamut of Om, and we talked a lot of in detail about Om. Remember I told you, Uma represents all the alphabet. So it represents all the names. So it represents all the forms. So actually Om represents the entire upper of this, lower world, lower nature of the Lord, but it also the silence represents the higher nature. So when the entire this Om, when Om the person chants and this whole thing goes through his mind, he understands Om as this and not as my son's name or somebody's name, then he will go to the supreme reality. Prashnopanishad and Kathopanishad also says Om is the means and Om is the goal. That also it says. Okay. So now that Om, Bhagwan says, I will tell you in detail. So now he says, Sarvadvarani sayamya manoridhi nirudhyacha murnyadhyayatmana pranam astito yoga dharanam. Having closed all the gates, having confined the mind in the heart, having fixed the life breath in the head, engaged in the practice of concentration, and we'll chant the next verse as well because it's a continuation. This one is half. Om itekaksharam brahma vyaharan mamanusmaran yaprayati tyajan deham sayati paramam gatim. Uttering the one-syllabled Om, the symbol of Brahman, and remembering me, he who departs, leaving the body, attains the supreme goal. So, two conditions. So, two verses. Sarvadvarani sayamya manoridhi nirud. Sarvadvara is the senses. Like dvara is gates. And through the gates of the eyes and the ears and the nose and the mouth, the mind is running out. That's what is meant. These are the gates where the mind runs out of. Yeah. Even the genitals and organs, all the organs. So there sayamya, the mind is now controlled. It is not allowed to run out from these apertures. And it is then fixed in the heart chakra. Chakra is not mentioned, but that is what is meant. So all the mind, just like earlier on also he said that the mind is made steady. How can the mind be made steady? What is the mind being unsteady means? It is running out, not through the apertures. So all these apertures are now closed, means the mind is not allowed to go out and it is held in the heart chakra and then brought murdhya dhyayatmana. So then through the Ajna chakra, it is brought to the top. This is all yoga shastra. This is Patanjali's yoga sutras. It talks about all these things in detail, how it is to be done and all that, right? pranam asito yoga dharanam. So this, all these pranas, because pranas and mind, they control each other. If you remember Upadesar, remember? Pranas and mind, Bhagwan Raman Maharshi says, are like two branches of the same tree. So when there are two branches, when there's one tree, if you shake one branch, the other branch also shakes because they are connected to the same base. Here, the mind and the pranas are connected. The source is the supreme reality. So by controlling one, you can automatically control the other because there is a connection. Very easy to understand. When a person gets angry, his breath becomes very this thing, or emotional. When we are crying, then our breath. Or a person who is in deep sleep, watch his breath. It is extremely regulated. Why? Because the mind is completely folded. So when the mind is quiet, the breath also quietens. Vice versa. So what you can do is by controlling the breath, because breath is grosser than the mind. So it is always easy to control the gross at any, in any case, in any condition. So control the mind. In Upadesar, he gives a very simple technique. Of course, we have Patanjali's, what is that? Pranayam. Pranayam is like that, Rechaka, Kumbhaka, Puraka, all that, which is very, very, should not be done without the instruction of a guru. But with Raman Maharshi, what he says is, you just watch the breath going in and out. That's why he says, Manoridhi Nirudhacha Prana Mastito, he says. Both he has said, Mana and Prana. Why? Because they are connected. They're not two separate things. So if the mind is controlled and kept, the pranas will automatically be controlled. Because mind is subtler than the pranas, gross. So subtle controls the gross. So first he says that the mind is not allowed to run out of the apertures, the various apertures, and it is held in the heart chakra. From there it is brought into the Bruhor Madhya, you already said. Automatically the pranas are also now controlled. Mind is controlled, pranas are controlled. Yoga dharanam, it is kept in yoga. And then meditate on the Om. Om iti ekaksharam. It is, so this, that's why the Sambandh Bhasha, Bhagwan has brought in Prashnopanishad and Kathopanishad. Why is, because Bhagavad Gita, mostly it is based on Kathopanishad. We know that entire Bhagavad Gita is an essence of the Upanishads. But among the Upanishads, Ishavasya and Kathopanishad. Ishavasya verse number 3 is the seed of Bhagavad Gita. That's what it said. And most of it is from Kathopanishad. So already earlier on, he has taken verses from Kathopanishad. Most of it is from Kathopanishad. And therefore, that is the Samand Bhasha. So there they talked about Om Upasana. So here also Bhagavan is saying that controlling the mind, when this person, and controlling the mind, I've already told you, that means he has already done it throughout his life. If he can meditate on Om and he remembers me, Sayati Paramam Gatim, Saha Yati, he will come to the Param, Supreme Abode, Gatim Abode, Supreme Abode, okay? Which is me, which is a point of no return. That is self-realization. That is, you know, Videha Mukti, that is Mukti. So that means there is no more future birth. Okay. Now,
Ananya Cheta Satatam Yo Mam Smarati Nityashah Tasyaham Sulabham Partha Nityayuktasya Yoginah.
I am easily attainable by that ever steadfast yogi who constantly remembers me daily, not thinking of anything else, O Partha. People, you know, he's saying that I am, because why is he easily attainable? Because he is ever present, right? But for us, what happens is there is a veiling. This is the covering of Maya. Maya has got this veiling power, and this supreme reality is veiled. And the veiling is not like a physical veiling or anything like that. It is the non-attention, because our attention is somewhere else. It's like, you know, if I'm talking to somebody and then my attention is fully on that person, if somebody else comes and says anything, then I don't notice the other person because my attention is on this side. So that is the kind of veiling that we have. So therefore, Bhagwan is saying that it is not difficult to attain me, but what is required is, and some sort of attention has to be paid to me. This is what ananya cheta satatam yo, the one who satatam, even also earlier he said sarveshu kaleshu, at all times remember me. That's what also he said, right? So same way, the one yo mam smarati nityashah, smarati, who remembers me all the time, it will become very easy for him to come to me. As you think, so shall you become. So if you keep thinking of him, you will become him. We don't, because we are very much caught up in the world. Right? Very simple, like straightforward statements he's making. So that's why he says, by that ever steadfast yogi who constantly remembers me, the one who is remembering chapter, like verse 9 and understanding, doing meditation. These are practitioners of yoga, huh? Those who are doing. Then the question arises, but why we should gain you? Why this, you know, why we, because it seems like quite a lot of hard work. So why we should put in this hard work? So that's what he answers. Mamu petya punar janma dukkhalayam ashashvatam nanu napnu vanti mahatmanah sausiddhim paramam gataah. Having attained me, these mahatmas or great souls do not again take birth, which is the house of pain and is non-eternal, they having reached the highest perfection, moksha. So this is the phala shruti. You know, everything, every time we say, what is in it for me? So every text also always will give this phala shruti. What is the result? So the question now is being answered that, yeah, you're saying that constantly we should remember you, and then at the time of death, we have to do this pranas thing and bring it out and all that. Then what do I get out of this, right? What you get is no future births. Why? Because this samsara that you're born in is nothing but dukkha dukkha. See, Gautam Buddha has said, sarvam dukkham dukkham sarvam kshanikam kshanikam. Why do they say that this is all dukkha dukkha? Because if you think of any kind of pleasure or happiness that you have experienced in your life, after a few years, it doesn't give you that much pleasure as it gave you the first time. Like, because you see, when a statement is made like that by a great master like Buddha, sarvam dukkham dukkham, people don't understand it, because they say, what do you mean, sir? I have so many times I have experienced happiness, and I'm experiencing it even now. Like, what do you mean? My life is not all dukkha dukkha. The point there is that, because here also dukkha dukkhalayam ashashvatam, this word he has used here also, that this world, alayam is abode, it's an abode of sorrow, and it is ashashvatam, means it is fleeting, it is impermanent, it is temporary. So what you will get is an abode of happiness, 100% 24/7 happiness and permanent happiness. So the point comes is that, what do you mean this is only dukkha dukkha? So this sukha that we enjoy, at one point, yes, I do feel very happy, but after a while it fades. It does not give you that much happiness that you felt when that thing actually happened. Say you graduated, or you got married, or you got your first child. That time, whatever happiness you felt after 20 years, it doesn't feel that happy. Now, with dukkha, suppose if there is one mosquito bite and it's just dukkha. If 100 mosquitoes come and bite you, it is the same dukkha. Dukkha never becomes sukha. Remember that dukkha, and also suppose if some sorrowful thing has happened many years ago, you know, whatever may have happened. When you remember that dukkha, do you feel happy? If any sorrowful thing has happened, see, if a happy thing has happened, if you remember it, it will make you happy, but that level of happiness will be far less as the years go by. It will not make you feel sad. Okay, I graduated top of my class. But after 20 years, okay, so what's the big deal? Some things, so we say like that only. That time we would have been on the top of the world. I graduated top of my class. But after I've achieved so many things, then that is like, oh, okay, so no big deal. It happened. Whereas that dukkha, suppose if something had happened, even after 20 years at that point, you will feel dukkha only. You can never feel happiness for that dukkha that happened that many years ago. Right? So that what happens is sukha becomes dukkha and dukkha remains dukkha. That is how this world works. And therefore, it is called Dukkha Alayam Ashashvatam. Ashashvatam, to we know, thoughts are not remaining the same body and the world is constantly changed. So Ashashvatam, there's not much to, like, you know, how come it is Ashashvatam. You see that. You see friends becoming enemies, enemies becoming friends. Why did people say like that? Why? So many things are changing. Weather is changing. History, geography, everything is changing, right? So that Ashashvatam, it is not permanent, ephemeral it is, fleeting. So this, the one who attains me, mama upetya, one who gains me, he gets freed from punarjanma na vidyate. He gets freed from the cycle of birth and death. Ramdas, you know, Sant Ramdas in his Manache Shloka, he has written these verses to the mind, where he addresses the mind, oh mind, do this, oh mind, do that. There he says, oh mind, understand that the fetus in the womb undergoes so much pain and so much dukkha that you really don't want to be a fetus again. This is how he says it in the verses. In his Dasbodh also he says that the fetus apparently is really very, very, it is very painful for that fetus in the womb, when it is in the womb. And the fetus actually remembers, it seems, all the sorrows, all the past births and all that, and doesn't want to take birth. The fetus in the womb says, don't give me birth because this is sorrowful. But unfortunately, what happens is when the fetus actually gets born, Maya covers it immediately and all the previous births are forgotten, which is good, but it's forgotten. So then the jiva starts indulging in the world. So what Sant Ramdas and what the masters and what Bhagavan Krishna is also saying here is that understand that it is like that and strive, at least strive to not get a future birth. And the other guarantee, like there is no guarantee that we'll get a human birth. So at least then, you know, at least those who are not, you know, aspiring for self-realization and all that, then at least what is being told is that please do good actions that you will at least get human birth again. That's why it is said that you can go lower. Kathopanishad says it, Bhagavad Gita also says it, that you can go into lower yonis. So at least do good actions. First, it is only good actions. And then as they start doing good action, then say, now drop the doership. First, it doesn't matter. You have doership, doesn't matter, but you do good. Okay, you want a thank you. You want recognition. If you do good, okay, doesn't matter. We'll give you recognition. You do good. And as the person progresses in that, then slowly he's introduced to the fact, now you drop the doership. Don't ask for recognition. So karma converting into karma yoga for this reason. So therefore he says, Napnuvanti Mahatmana, these Mahatmas, these great souls who have done all this and they've reached me, then they don't come back and they sau siddhim. Siddhim here is gain. They gain this paramagataha. So they go to this supreme abode. In chapter 15, he says, what does he say? Nirmana moha jita sangha dosha. Tadhama parama mama yad gatva na nivartante. Yad gatva na nivartante, he says. Having gone there, nobody returns into this world. And why we don't want to return into this world is because it is an abode of sorrow. Okay. Now, from 16 onwards, he will talk about krama mukti. So we will do that. We'll start that portion next time because he's where you go to higher worlds and then from there. In mukti, there is videha mukti, there is jivan mukti, and there is krama mukti. There are three types of muktis. In bhakti shastra, there are five types of muktis, that is Sayuja muktis, Salokya mukti. But those bhakti muktis that they talk about, they go to the abode of that Ishta Devata. Okay, and so one mukti is where they reach the abode. One mukti is where they actually look like Bhagwan only, like Bhagwan Vishnu, Sayujya, Salokya, like that muktis are there. But here in Vedanta, there are these three muktis. Videha mukti. Videha means upon the dropping of the body. So after death. Videha, vigata deha, when the body is dropped without the body. So that time there is. And jivan mukti is while living itself, there is liberation. And krama mukti is where the person goes to higher and higher worlds because he has done those type of karmas to get more and more evolved births. And once he reaches Brahma Loka, they say that Brahmaji himself gives them the teaching and they get liberated at the end of the kalpa though. At the end of that kalpa, they get liberated. So it's a long time. Bhagavan Shankaracharya says, who knows? Yes, it is there. Scriptures say that. But rather than wait for that long, why not try for Jivan Mukti in this life itself? So this is the topic now that he's going to take. That's why he says, but are there any who come back not reaching the highest? So they go to these higher lokas, and what Bhagwan is saying is, yes, they can go and they can get mukti, but they can also come back. So there is, it's not a place of guaranteed non-return. That is what Bhagwan will say. I will stop here. We will continue next time. Next class will be the last class in December. And I also wanted to let you know that I will be traveling from January 18th onwards. So 18th is Friday night. So January 20th, from 20th onwards, there won't be class until mid-February almost, or the last week in third week in February. I will write the dates to you guys. But so depending on when we are starting in January, I will either take there are 2 weeks, but what day we are starting, I'm not sure. So either there'll be one or two Mondays that I will take class, and I will try and finish 28. We are at 15. I think, yeah, because there's not now much of explanation after this. So hopefully before I go, I should, if I can get two classes in January, then I can finish this chapter, which will be a good idea rather than just a little bit to leave. So, you know, or one class we can take a little bit more. So that's what it is. Any questions?
Yes, Jayaji, I have a couple of questions. Is there time to ask them?
Sorry? Yeah. Sure.
So one question was, you know, listening to all that you discussed right now, I have a doubt that maybe doing Om Upasana, would that be easier than doing all that abhyasa that Bhagwan is talking about? That
remembering. No, Om Upasana is also abhyas only, no?
Yeah, but compared to understanding the Bhagwan as a whole, all that Paramapurusha, all that descriptions that we talked about and remembering that, would doing just Om Upasana be an easier way of doing it?
It will be easy, but please understand that Om also means all those things.
Yes.
So when you say Om, that's what I said. When you say Om, because people name their children Om.
Mm-hmm.
So if I say Om and now I'm thinking of my child,
yeah,
they're not going to work. So that's why that Om, I gave explanation of Om. Then you should know all that. Om represents the lower self, the Turiya state and the waking, all that. If it comes to your mind, then Om Upasana is, yeah, because ultimately it is the same thing. Because Om is representing him. You either take this, or it's up to you. If you find it easier, go for it.
Just thinking,
but
because
Om,
you will be able to, you know, a person may not be able to remember all the other descriptions that we learned about and discussed. But seeing that Om is the entire world and the lower nature and the higher nature of Bhagwan, and then doing Upasana, maybe it is an easier step. I do not know. I just feel like that.
like that. But see, also there are so many, I'll tell you, so many like sort of adjectives were given, right? In verse 9, Kaviman. You can take one and stick to it.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to remember all. See, that's why I said Sarvadnya if you take. Now, Sarvadnya, see how much consequences there are. Sarvadnya means what? Now he's watching. That means my whole life will change, right? So if you stick with Sarvadnya, say, you don't have to know Puranam and Anushasitaram. Automatic Anushasitaram. Because if he's watching me, and if I'm now, you know, making sure that my words and speech and actions are in accordance with the Shastra, Anushasitaram is already coming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I'm constantly aware that he's watching me, I am keeping myself in the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not running in the past and the future, right? So yeah. Any one word will encompass all the words if followed correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Correctly you follow. Then it doesn't, you don't have to do all. That's why I told, even whole Bhagavad Gita, that's why I'm telling you, is not required. In this chapter itself, I've given you two verses. Only those two you hold on to and that's enough. Right?
Yeah.
That's the trick there. Yeah. If you find it,
that itself is going to take a lot of effort.
But you know what? The fun is in the journey only.
Yeah.
You just keep on putting effort and then it'll come one day. Yeah.
Okay. Well, one more question I have.
Yeah.
So you talked about all that mukti that is based on bhakti.
Mm.
So and you said that is not you just go to the abode of the Ishta Devata, but still you can come back. Is it like that or?
Yeah, you can. It is not reaching that formless substratum, na?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to an abode which is also impermanent.
Hmm.
Though Bhakti Shastra says that is it and they are happy. They are happy to be like that. Bhakti, see, in devotion, it's a whole kind of a different attitude where the devotee says, I don't want liberation.
Hmm.
Because then who will I love? He says, no, I will take birth. What is the big deal? As long as I have this extreme devotion to you, I don't mind rebirth and birth and birth. So Bhakti Shastra is slightly little, means it, ultimately it is this thing, but in Bhakti, this is how they say, the devotees. Sant Tukaram has said that. I don't want liberation, he has said. I want birth. But every birth, you must give me this supreme devotion to your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So ultimately, okay. Bhagwan will give them, you know, when they love Bhagwan that much, Bhagwan is so compassionate.
Yeah. One last question, one more question.
Sure.
You said that at the time of death, you know, if you remember, if throughout our life we have been remembering, we have been doing the upasana, we have been doing the abhyas. And at the time of death, we put in that, you know, the effort becomes easier. You don't have to put in that much effort and you can remember a lot. But death can come in at different times.
Yes.
In different ways. So what if the person does not have the memory or, you know, the ability to remember?
Yeah.
What happens then?
See, there was one verse where I explained that. Tad bhava bhavitaha. Which word, I'll tell you which. 1 minute. 1 minute. Tad bhava bhavita, there, verse 6. Tam tam tame vaiti kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavitaha. Tad bhava bhavitaha, what it means is that exactly the situation that suppose I have done that upasana throughout my life, but at the end I can't, for whatever reason, Bhagwan picks up and he remembers you. So, you keep doing. Don't worry how death is going to come. Because honestly, we don't know how death will come. We might go into a coma. We might die in the middle of the night. That's why it is still at night before going to bed, remember the Lord and go to bed. So, that last thought before falling asleep is that of the Lord. So, if something happens in the middle of the night, at least a little bit you're covered. And in the morning you do, because during the daytime you don't know what is happening, right? But if you can do morning, at night and throughout the day, and that's, over the years I've given many, like first is keeping in the present. All my passwords are Bhagwan's names. So any application that I open, I have to type in. So automatic thought, starting a journey, Har Har Mahadev, whatever, Krishna, Rama, whatever, whatever. Any situation that comes, good situation, thank you, Lord, it's because of you that bad situation comes. Lord, it could have been worse. You have saved me. Now only this much. Now please give me this. So that practice, if we keep now, that is enough. Because in that practice itself, we acknowledge the fact that he is the supreme ruler. See, it's not necessarily supreme ruler. But when I say, thank you, Lord, it's because of you, I have already acknowledged the fact that he is the supreme. Means we should not do it insincerely. Yeah? But we can't do these things insincerely, I think. So sincerely, when you say, thank you, Lord, then automatically you have recognized the fact that he is Sarvajna and all knowing and everything, right? You have given me this sorrow. Okay, now you give me the strength. You know, even when I get severe headaches or anything like that, or pain somewhere, you know, I actually chant the name of the Lord. Any opportunity you get, chant the name of the Lord, right? So those type of things. That's why throughout the life we do, at death, what happens? Then Bhagwan will take over. That is the meaning of that Tad Bhav Bhavitaha. He will be there. He's there. That faith we must have.
Yes.
Strong faith. Faith you must have. See, I have people, you know, they have also lost their husbands like me. And then they say, oh, we feel so lonely. There is nobody to say good morning to. See, if you're feeling lonely, that means you have no faith in God. Why are you feeling lonely? If you know that he's, present every time, everywhere, why do you feel lonely? See, this is what I tell them. Then they don't like when I say those things. And I'm like, but why can't you say good morning to the Lord? Which I am doing myself. There's nobody to say, hey, that means there's no God. So they don't have faith. They think God could give an idol. Because then they think that it is only an idol. Na? See, that idol is there, but you must infuse life into that. And you must think that is what real bhakti. What is bhakti? Considering that idol is not some metal or wood thing. Bhagwan is standing there. We were doing paduka puja and the lady, she had put the padukas like toes facing away. So see, if you're doing paduka means Gurudev is standing. How you'll do paduka puja when Gurudev's back is to you? Those things, that is what faith is. That is what bhakti is. That no, these padukas means Gurudev is standing. That means he has to stand facing me. Na, how you will do wash the feet? If the Gurudev is standing with his back to you, right? See, those little things. So I honestly get up and when I take my bath, my altar is right here. I say, good morning, Krishna. I start my day with good morning, Krishna. But why? I mean, touch wood. It's grace. Why? I always feel his presence everywhere, right? Or so much depression and so much, and then the other people, ignorant, blind, leading the blind. I can understand, you know, there's nobody to say good morning. I say, why? Bhagwan is not there? Then everybody's quiet. That is what is required. You understand that faith is there. Then you're automatically recognizing the fact that he's Sarvajna, he's this thing. It's, you know, why do you want to? That's why Mirabai has said, why I will marry a human being who will make me a widow? I will marry Bhagwan only, na? Then I will never become a widow. That's why she married Krishna. That's what she said in one of her bhajan. She has said that. Why should I marry a mortal and who can make me a widow? I don't want all this. I'm marrying Bhagwan. That means I can never become a widow. So that is that faith that people don't have. People don't have that. That if we have, then we have manifested. Then we have recognized him correctly. That he's there. We're saying he's there in and through the creation. And now I'm alone at home. If he's in and through the creation, then what? Your house is not there. You can't say that only. You must never say that. And you must feel it also, you know, not just say it for the sake of saying, but you must feel. And if you're really feeling it, you will not feel lonely. You will not feel lonely. You're alone, but you're not lonely. Any other questions?
Jayaji, I think I clarified this before. When I realize, when somebody's realized that the ego is gone, the consciousness that's released, there is no bliss or happiness, because that the consciousness does not feel anything. It's just when you have the ego, and that's when you realize sadness and happiness. But once it's released and you join Paramatma, it's neutral. There is no sadness or happiness.
But when you're saying released, you're saying death, when they die, when the realized person passes on, or while living?
When they pass on.
Yeah, when they pass on, they're merging.
They're merging. So there is no, we say bliss, but it's just that there's nothing to experience after that.
No. They become one with the supreme reality, yeah. Right? One with the substratum. So there is nothing. Experience can happen only when they come back into the embodiment.
If they come back.
Yeah. Because the upadhi is required for. That's why body is known as bhog ayatanam. Remember tattva bodh. You need a counter to experience. If there is no counter, there can be no experience. So because that counter is not going to come back for them, there will be never any experience.
Yeah. So there's... We keep saying blessed, but there's nothing to be experienced after that.
No. That bliss is not the one that we experience. What we experience is pleasure through the sense organs. That bliss is the independence of existence and consciousness with each other. That is what that bliss is. It is beyond happiness and sorrow. That's why it is called bliss and not happiness. Happiness is opposed to sorrow. But bliss is neither happiness nor sorrow.
Just
like consciousness is neither light nor darkness. It is illumining both light and darkness. Bliss is both happiness and sorrow. And what bliss is sat is dependent, independent. Sat and chit they're both independent. Like I exist and I only know I'm conscious of my existence. That is the independence. I don't need somebody else to tell me that you're existing. I know myself. That independence of sat and chit is what bliss is. Therefore, in Taittiriya Upanishad, it is called ananta. Satyam, jnanam, anantam brahma. Not anandam. Anantam, infinite. Bliss is only in infinity. So once you become one with infinity, it's all bliss. It's not a question of experiencing anything. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Jayaji, I have one little question. Can I ask or next time?
Yeah. No. Okay. I mean, I'm okay as long as everybody else is okay. I'm okay. Ask.
Okay. Whatever we are listening and we are acquiring knowledge, whatever we are studying, but how can it will be my wisdom? How can I acquire wisdom? This knowledge becomes wisdom. So is there a process or whatever
meditation
we are doing?
Meditate. Whatever you're studying is parokshanyana. Because you're listening from somebody else. This paroksha has to become aparoksha. Aparoksha means direct. Paroksha means indirect. If it has to become direct experience, you have to experience it yourself. And that can happen only in the seat of meditation. Nididhyasanam has to be done. Shravanam you're doing now. Mananam is the reflecting upon whatever that you've heard and removal of all doubts. Shravanam is removing ignorance. We were not knowing that the supreme reality is formless and it's within us and it's the inner controller. We didn't know that. That ignorance has been removed in Shravanam. Then in Mananam, but how come it is like that? But how come it is like that? Not like this. All those doubts should be removed in mananam. And mm-hmm. then finally, you would go into nididhyasanam, which is meditation. And that is where you would fix your mind on that supreme reality. And that mind will then merge and it will become wisdom. It will become aparokshanayana.
That means you abide in that.
Yes, yes. Then that abidance will come. Yes, yes, yes.
So it will be in my unconscious mind or above that?
There will be no mind. Yeah. Unconscious or conscious, the mind will merge, right?
Yeah, so it will be beyond. That will be wisdom, right?
Yeah, that will be wisdom. Wisdom is like, see, if I tell you that the pyramids are huge and this and that and everything, that is parokshanayana. When you yourself go and visit the pyramids, it will become that is wisdom. And you will never forget that. And nobody so that can shake that.
Experience is wisdom. That experiencing.
In here, yes. Yes. Approach. Direct, right? Directly now you've seen the pyramids. Now nobody can shake that conviction.
Okay.
If you have heard from me, somebody else might come and say, "Arey, what is she talking? They're not that big. They're not that good." Except then your conviction will shake. It's not conviction. Your thought that you've heard from me, if somebody else comes and tells you opposite, it'll shake, right? But now you yourself have gone seen the pyramids. Now anybody can come and tell you anything. No, I have seen it. I know how good it is.
Okay.
Finish. Now
so it's
that is approach. Which cannot, can never be shaken. See, right now we're doing Shravanam. Somebody else might come tell us something. We might shake. We don't know that.
Yeah.
Why do you think people leave the mission and go? Because they think that no, this is not, this doesn't seem right. That seems right. But once you get established in it, nobody can shake you. Nobody.
Okay.
No.
So acquire wisdom. We need meditation, nididhyasana. And for that, we are doing Shravanam and Mananam.
Shravanam and Mananam is preceding Nididhyasanam, correct. Okay. First Shravanam, then Mananam, removal of doubts, and then removal of wrong notions.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we'll close. I'll see you next Monday. Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Good night, everybody.